Thank you, Mr. Fonda. My fellow Americans, I'm speaking to you from my office in the Library at Independence. It is named the Harry S. Truman Library, but it belongs to the people of the United States. Many come here to see, to hear, to learn about the presidency, the most unique office in the history of man, and the most powerful, and I hope they go away with a fuller appreciation of this great office. Let me tell you right off that I do not regard the presidential elections that are coming up as a contest between two reasonably well-matched candidates. The man who heads the Democratic ticket is, on all important counts, vastly superior to his Republican opponent. The American people manage to hold on to their good sense and sound judgment in face of this spectacle that we have been witnessing. This election should turn out to be more of a rout than a contest. Strictly on merit and capacity to administer, the Democratic ticket is entitled to win by nothing short of acclamation. The Republican candidate has been expressing and proposing some curious ideas, some silly, and some very damaging. His running mate has been so wild, he is something out of the distant past. In fact, he's out of the dark past. The two of them have been shooting at everything in and out of sight, hoping to connect with some major issue. So far, they have come up with nothing like an issue, but they have succeeded in hurting some innocent bystanders. They have been hurting people in our military organization. They have hurt people in our foreign service. They've been hurting our friends and allies abroad. In playing partisan politics with a sensitive and critical area of war and peace, they have been hurting this nation's leadership. What is more, they have been giving comfort to the enemy without realizing what they were doing. If these were normal times, we could charge off their irresponsible talk to campaign oratory, and we could be charitable by forgiving them, for they obviously know not what they say or what they do. But these are not normal times. These are serious and critical times, the most dangerous in our history. One wrong move, one careless or impulsive decision, and the world could be facing disaster, terrible disaster. It is not a pleasant thing to see how the Republican candidates have aimed their appeals mostly to the suspicious, to the backward, to the simple-minded, to the uninformed, to the frightened, and to the timid among us. I would say that men who aim at so low a level and who hold the people in such low esteem, I say that these people don't belong in the White House. They would be more at home in the Smithsonian Institution. The fact is, the Republican candidates are not debating the real issues. They are using the opportunity to confuse, to agitate, to frighten, and to discredit. This is the same old divide and conquer method. It was indeed a national tragedy when the responsible Republican leaders let their party get away from them at San Francisco to be captured by the extremists and the know-nothings. They have been trying to recapture it since, but with not much success. And now they seem to be stuck with it for 4 years, or at least until the next coming election. In the meantime, how can the Republican nominee hope to lead this nation when he cannot lead his own party, a party which he, in fact, has caused to be not only split, but fragmentated? How can he help to unite the leadership of the free world when he threatens them with unilateral action? How can he unite our own people when he cannot unite himself? He has one thing in San. He was one thing in San Francisco, bold and daring. He was something else than the hero when they got him, when they got done with him at Hersey, Pennsylvania. The man the Republicans nominated at San Francisco is a kind of a political Rip Van Winkle. He seems to have slept away the most dynamic half of this century in the history of man. These are the people who talk big, but who think small. He is even attracted to his cause those curious fanatics in our midst who clutter the mail with hate. I believe that as long as we function under our traditional two-party system, we can debate the issues, we can present each side, and we can do it without resorting to personalities. But we now face a situation which seriously threatens the two-party system we have known. The other party was ambushed in San Francisco and captured by the most brazen display of arrogance ever witnessed at a convention. The historic conservative spokesmen were forced out to make way for the radical conservatives who took over the control of the party. This is what has troubled many of the responsible people of both major parties. With all the able men that were available from which the convention could have chosen a leadership, it comes up with two of the strangest political primitives we have encountered in this century. Now take a good look at the man who heads the Democratic ticket, President Lyndon Johnson. He is a gifted and inspired leader who comes along all too seldom. President Johnson meets the needs of this difficult period in our history of perfection. Lyndon Johnson understands the workings and complexities of our system of government in all of its branches. Lyndon Johnson understands our position in this new kind of world in which we live and with which we will have to get along. He has shown in the few months that he has been president that he has conducted himself with intelligence and decision on all the important domestic issues. President Johnson has shown in his short time a remarkable capacity to grasp the intricacies of the foreign policy and has met critical problems with patience, firmness, and foresight. He has proved that he has a mind of his own and that he knows how to use it. In years past, as majority leader, he has proved himself one of the greatest leaders in the history of the United States Senate, and I would trust him implicitly as the man to negotiate the outstanding differences with our foes to secure peace and honor and justice for all concerned. This is the overriding issue that confronts the United States and the world in this atomic age. President of the United States is no job for men who do not understand all the elements that are involved in that office, men who tend to oversimplify it by advocating brinkmanship or resorting to recklessness. I would put my faith and trust in President Johnson as a negotiator at the peace tables for this nation's security. I have seen him work at first hand. I have seen him in action. I have seen his entire devotion to the public interest. I have seen him drive himself beyond the endurance of less inspired men and drive through to success. I have seen him accomplish many difficult legislative successes that were badly needed to keep this nation sound and moving forward. I've seen President Johnson rise to the call time and again when a Republican administration was in charge, when he put the welfare of the nation and an above-party advantage. For the great Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, well understood the history and destiny we have set this nation on a course from which it could not and must not turn back. On November the 3rd, you will go to the polls to have your say. I know that you will vote for the best of this nation and your personal welfare as well. As I see it, if you work in a factory, you have but one choice. If you work on a farm, you have but one choice. If you are retired, you have but one choice. If you're a white-collar worker, you have but one choice. If you're a parent concerned about the education of your children, you have but one choice. If you're a parent, if you as a parent are concerned about the protection of the peace, you have but one choice. If you're worried about the catastrophic illness, especially in old age, you have but one choice. If you are concerned with the problem of solving our civil rights difficulties, legally, humanely, and in the best American tradition, you have but one choice. In all these, it is overwhelmingly Lyndon Johnson. And finally, I would urge you to vote for the President Johnson because he is a man of action, a man of experience, a man of compassion, a man with the most important discipline every president must have, the discipline of patience. As your former president, I urge you to vote and to vote for Johnson and Humphrey. They will serve you honorably and well. Thank you very much for listening. Well, you're ready. If the American people manage to hold on to their good sense and sound judgment in face of this spectacle that we've been witnessing, this election should turn out to be more of a rout than a contest. And the next is on the top of this page. Whenever you're ready, we'll do the other one.
Right ahead, anytime.
Go ahead.
You ready? If he and the great Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, start again. For he and the great Speaker of the House, Sam Rayburn, well understood that history and destiny have set this nation on a course from which it could not and must not turn back.
Excellent.
If you are worried about catastrophic illness, especially in old age, you have but one choice. If you are concerned with the problems of solving our civil rights, legally, humanely, and in the best American tradition, you have but one choice.
Hold it a minute. Catastrophic.
If you are worried about catastrophic illness, especially in old age, you have but one choice. If you are concerned with the problems of solving our civil rights difficulties, legally, humanely, and in the best American tradition, you have but one choice. Let's do it.